Off the ball. Rugby.
I'd love to start a dog bone Joe McCarthy and go, well, we're picking power and physicality here. Yeah, and put Tyburn in the back row. I think the line-out is something I'm always banging on about.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
It's really enjoyable, really fun.
I'm fascinated by this. That game is unbelievable.
What is the point here?
Falls right off the tongue.
They need a bit of vibes, man.
Welcome along to another episode of Outside the Box. I'm Ben Symes. I'm joined by David Wilson and Matthew Brennan. We're going to be bringing you all things Irish football as we do every week. Lads, how are you keeping?
All good.
Yeah, all good, Ben.
We're going to start. We're going to go straight into this.
Yeah, no messing around.
People who are avid listeners of Off the Ball Breakfast will know Matthew Brennan's green scene. Matthew, do you want to explain to people who don't know, maybe very quickly, what is the green scene?
Yeah, well, the green scene, typically, week-to-week basis, we'll run through an EFL team of the week of Irish players, or Irish EFL team of the week. We've done, I think, 18, 19 episodes at this stage. And the 19th one was today. So we'll run through an EFL team of the week. We'll go through our managers over there in England and sometimes further afield, obviously Robbie Keane's over in Hungary. And then we'll go into a roundup of our players over in Europe. And that typically is how it works. But the reason we're talking about it today is because this week was slightly different. We had a very special guest. Those of you, as Ben mentioned, who do this and regularly will be familiar with Joe Murphy. And those of you maybe from a different vintage from maybe 20 years ago might be slightly older than the three of us. Well, me and Ben anyway. Might be very familiar.
Uncle over here.
Yeah, exactly. With a certain Joe Murphy, who is Tranmere Rovers goalkeeper. He's 44 years of age. He was the goalkeeper for Brian Kerr's under 16 European Championship winning team back in 1996? 98?
Well, I think 98 was the under 18s because that was Liam George's old team.
Anyway, late 90s. Yeah, he was the goalkeeper for that team. He was the under 21 player of the year not too long afterwards. He picked up a couple of caps for Ireland, but he's still playing his trade for Tranmere Rovers in League Two. And as I mentioned, he's 44 years of age. So we had the pleasure of being joined by him this morning, and I don't want to be pushing my own thing too much, but I thoroughly recommend you go and listen to it. And we did about 40 minutes with Joe. He had to run himself. He actually had a meeting because he is the goalkeeping coach of Tranmere Rovers as well as player. So he had to leave a bit early. So we didn't get to go through everything in enough detail, but we will definitely do that at some point in the future.
Yeah, we might quickly throw up Matthew Brennan's green scene team. So what you're looking at right now is what Matthew Brennan thinks are the best Irish players in the EFL. This is a rolling team of the week.
No, that's so yeah, the best players in the EFL over the course of the last week.
Okay.
Not on the basis of the whole season. It's a slightly rolling team of the week. Rolling in the sense that if a player has had a good week and another player has had a good week, I might look at how they did the few weeks prior and that'll edge my decision. But it is more of a week-to-week basis type thing. So I'll run through the team this week. I'm bringing the team now because we obviously didn't have time with Joe on this morning. We've got Jack Bonham in goal. He's playing for Bolton. He signed there in January. He's played three games, kept two clean sheets. He kept one against Stevenage and they beat Leighton Orient 2-1. He wasn't at fault for the goal, so he's in goal this week on loan from Stoke, obviously at Bolton. Now, positions, you know, we take them as we don't take them for literal in the team of the week. You know how these team of weeks work. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we try to keep it as close as we possibly can, but we've got three centre halves in our back four and a midfielder at right back. But our midfielder at right back is playing.
The right back looks like a right back to me. Matthew.
No, I don't know. You want to get the context of that? Go listen to last week's episode. But Adam Brown's in right back, absolutely flying for Middlesbrough. We've got Connor Masterson beside him alongside John Egan, and Aaron Cashin's in a left back playing at the left of a back three at the weekend for Blackburn. Midfield four, loose midfield four. We've got Jason Malumbi, we've got Jack Moylan, we've got Adomo Emaku, and we've got Marcus Harness, and our front two is Dave McGoldrick and Ryan Graydon. Where do you want to go, lads?
We touched on Alan Brown last week. Alan Brown's had a fantastic week. Yeah. He played right back during the week, and then I think, did he play centre midfield on the weekend?
Yeah, it was a fluid sort of setup. So I actually, not totally off the back of our kind of debate around, our short debate at the end of last week's episode about the midfield, I decided, you know what, that night or the night after, I think it might have been the Wednesday, Middlesbrough were playing Stoke. And I said, you know what, there's a good bit of Irish interest here though. We've got Alan Brown obviously playing for Middlesbrough. Alex Gilbert was actually starting that night as well. Yeah. And then on the Stoke side of things, obviously Boston Lualo, everyone's become very familiar with over the last couple of months really, and maybe a little bit before that if you're really into your Irish football. And then Gavin Bazunu was supposed to be starting. Obviously we heard about his injury, which is, I know we probably won't get into it today, but it is a disaster. Yeah. It's a shame for him. Alan Brown started right back that day and was excellent. He was really good. He scored a goal the first half was not perfect. Middlesbrough weren't great. They came out flying out the second half, and Alan Brown was kind of leading that charge. Scored the equaliser and set up the winner. And then I said, you know what? Saturday morning, I was sitting at home and I said, I need to see if this is actually... I know I've watched a bit of Alan Brown this season. I think he started 13 or 14 games for Middlesbrough this year. He started the last couple at right back, and he'd been playing all over the place in the midfield before that. A couple of games at 6, a couple of games at 10, a couple of games in the 8, obviously, where we're most familiar with him. And he actually started one game in the right of a back 3. So a bit of utility, man, but playing very well for one of the teams at the very top of the Championship. And they'll be boosted with that loss for Coventry last night, of course. But then going on to Saturday, Alan Brown was actually better, much better. He started the game at right back, but it's a very fluid system. I mean, they play some smashing football. They have a lot of incredibly technically gifted footballers. A lot of them you'd look at on the pitch and go, wait, which one is he? You know, they've got Leo Casaldine there, who just signed from Chelsea. They've got Hayden Hackney, who's a prestigious talent. Like, he's very well, very well regarded. And then you have Alan Brown there as well. Alex Gilbert too is very tidy. There's a video going around. I saw of him on a half turn there in the middle of a pitch against, I'm not sure if it was Preston at the weekend when he came on, or if it was earlier on in the season. But yeah, Alan Brown was excellent and played a lot of the game in midfield. As you mentioned there earlier on, and just seems like he's going from strength to strength. There's a lot of confidence there from him. And you, funnily enough, when you get like Alan Brown's had a funny sort of couple of years where he was at Preston, obviously club legend status there, I would say, particularly in the modern era for them. And left, not under a cloud, but sort of didn't sign a new contract and didn't really know what he was doing. I think he might have had a bit of an injury. And signed late on in the window for Sunderland on a free transfer, obviously, and was a little bit of a bit part player there. Like, played a lot, got featured in a lot of games, but not for a long amount of time. I think he made maybe 20 appearances or so, not that many starts. And then decided to stay at Sunderland for quite a while. At the end, after they had gotten promoted, and only joined Middlesbrough towards the end of the window. So missed the first couple of games of the season and got himself back up to fitness, and he's been very good for them this year. So in the context of Hamer Hallgrimsson's Republic of Ireland squad, you can get into the nitty gritty of it, but in terms of form and in terms of versatility and in terms of the injury problems that we have and the positions that we don't have a whole lot of depth in, I think it would be very surprising not to see him at least in the squad come March.
Well, we know obviously Middlesbrough are looking to buy him on a permit now, and I think it mainly is so they can get another loan space in, but also he hasn't pressed so much that he has earned a permanent signing.
Yeah. Especially if he's playing wing back, right of a back three, centre midfield. Ireland need players that are versatile, especially coming up to these two games, hopefully with our two competitive games for Ireland. Like, he's probably... You'd imagine a shoe-in for the squad?
I would say so, yeah. Like, I think, the only thing that kind of goes against that is the fact he hasn't been in the squads leading up to this point. And as I mentioned, there's been a couple of reasons for that. The start of the season, he wasn't really in the picture. And then I think he might have had a bit of a knock around the time of the last squad when we did have all those other injuries. Not to say he would have been in there, but I was kind of looking through his minutes that he played, and there was a period there around that November time where he was getting a few minutes off the bench and he wasn't playing as much as he had been prior and had been after. So I'm not exactly sure what that was about, but maybe he just wasn't fancied by Hamer and wasn't in the picture, which is fine. That's his own prerogative and it worked out. But yeah, I think a shoe-in would be what I would describe it as anyway. And a bit of fresh blood in the... Fresh blood
is right ball age.
But it is. In this squad, it's fresh blood, you know.
From my memory of him playing for Ireland, he's always played pretty well. Like, yeah. Especially in the Kenny era, he was definitely one of the players that scored goals.
Yeah, he scored an absolute cracker against...
Serbia away is what I think.
Yeah, he scored a cracker against Norway in the Aviva as well. Yeah. It might have been a friendly, but it was that was a worldly.
Getting into the box, you know, being a threat from open play and set pieces... Yeah, it's gonna. I can't see him starting in the game against.
I can't see him starting either. As much as I would, I think it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
If you're chasing a game, you're definitely gonna throw him on.
Yeah, and as far as like for like replacements go, for Josh Cullen, they're like, he's not that far away from any of the other guys we have in the team. Maybe slightly more advanced role, but he's picking and he's scoring goals. He's kicking up assists. He's getting goal contributions. So a very good week for him. Probably as good a week as any of our players have had in the club scene this season, I would say.
Yeah, 37 caps, 5 goals.
Not bad. Another man who is in the Matthew's team of the week.
Yeah,
another man who we haven't seen play for Ireland in a long, long time. A man who I loved playing for Ireland.
Yeah,
David D. Dizzy McGoldrick.
Yeah, and look, Dave McGoldrick, when I started doing this bit of a series on Breakfast at the start of the year, I anticipated talking about Dave McGoldrick on a regular basis and having him in these teams week in, week out. And I actually didn't put him in the first couple of teams because other guys were playing well. And I was like, you know what, I'll give these guys a mention. I'm sure McGoldrick will be in. Like, you know, like I'll lean it towards them because people might not be familiar with them and we'll get McGoldrick in later on. And that didn't really happen. He's had a decent season, okay. For Dave McGoldrick is what, 37, 38 now, and he's playing in League One. He stepped up a league after being at Notts County last year, which is where he started his career off, I believe, as well. So a bit of a step up for him, playing for his good friend, Conor Howard, obviously, as well, who I would imagine he's a couple of years older than. Well, he's a couple of years older than. So obviously signed for them at the start of the season, and they're not having the best year. You know, Barnsley's squad depth is a little bit light, and that's actually exactly how Dave McGoldrick got back into the starting lineup. This is 2 weeks in a row he's been in this team. He scored again at the weekend. He scored two the weekend before against Blackpool. They won 2-1. He scored a last minute winner, an excellent goal, taking on CJ Hamilton, actually, funnily enough, down the left and on the break, 94th minute winner. And he only came in that day because their talisman Davis Keeler Dunn was ill. Whether he was ill or not, or how ill he was, I'm not sure. He'd been linked with a move away. I don't think anything's really materialised there, so perhaps he was just ill. But McGoldrick got drafted in last minute and performed very well and kept that up at the weekend for them, as they got a 2-2 draw away to Reading. Yeah, goal and an assist there for him, so excellent. And I'd look, Dave McGoldrick, man, I'd sit there all day watching highlight reels of Dave McGoldrick.
It's just disappointing from an Irish perspective that we just didn't get enough out of him when we had him, and we didn't really kind of cotton on to the qualities that he had. Now at the time it was John Walter, Shane Long,
Daryl Murphy,
and like McGoldrick was maybe a bit more technical than them players, and he was playing a lot in the Championship. I remember particularly he was at Forest a couple of times and he was brilliant. So yeah, it was just disappointing from an Irish perspective. I think it's only like 13 or 14 caps in one goal.
I remember being behind that goal, that goal, and I
there's a couple of
Conor Horan's free kick with the tennis balls comes to mind as well. That's the same sort of era.
A couple more I'll just run through here if I'm not going to spend too much more time on it, but a couple of other players of slight interest, I suppose, moving out throughout this team. Conor Masterson, obviously former Liverpool product, had a horrible time with injuries over the last couple of years. He's got 2 goals in 2 games for Gillingham. He's obviously a centre half and they kept a clean sheet at the weekend. The better Colin Heffernan's Harrogate, who are really struggling down the bottom of the table. Aaron Cashin is someone who has kind of gone off the radar a little bit the last year, so was excellent at Derby when Wayne Rooney was there, a little bit after that, Leimer Senior times.
What's the story with Aaron Cashin? Yeah. Because he's like, he went to Brighton for like 10 million.
Yeah, they a big outlay for them, like, you know, and they don't tend to get it too wrong, but yeah, 10 or 12 million I think they paid. And he didn't really get looking for, well, he didn't get looking at all while he was there, and then got a move to Birmingham at the start of the season, which was
a loan move.
A loan move to Birmingham, at the start of the season. And it was one of them, even at the time, I would have looked at and gone, that's a little bit strange. Like, obviously, he's a good player, more than good enough to be playing at the top of the Championship, but the strength of Birmingham's team last year when they got promoted was at the back, and they only strengthened that again in the summer, and that proved to be the case with the minutes he got. And the minutes he did get, he was kind of getting that fullback. So Brighton recalled him in January, and he was, well, this month, and was shipped almost immediately out to Blackburn. And at the weekend, he started a good time there. He made his debut in the Cup, I think, and they kept a clean sheet against Hull, lost on penalties. And they were beaten 3-1 by Swansea in midweek, and he didn't play, which is always a great thing for these teams when there's these like EFL teams, when you're picking a team of the week and there's 2 games and one of your players doesn't play in the first one and he plays in the second one and the result's slightly better. So that's one of the reasons why he's got into this team. They had an all-Irish back three, Blackburn against Watford at the weekend. Aaron Cashin, Sean McLaughlin and Conor O'Riordan, who'd just been recalled from Doncaster, were at the back. And Conor O'Riordan got man of the match officially. Sean McLaughlin scored the goal, obviously in a 1-1 draw. But I was looking at a bit of the stats, and I was looking at some of the, you know, like the more in-depth stats as opposed to who scored and who got an assist or whatever, which is, you kind of need to look at for defenders, especially when there's not a clean sheet. And it seemed as though Aaron Cashin had been better on that sort of that side of things. And then I was looking into the, you know, some of what the fans have been saying, and they agreed. And then the fact he didn't play in the midweek and did play at the weekend, I thought, you know what, I'll spread the love here a little bit. But I'm not sure what the end goal is there for him. I think he might be, what's he, 25 now?
He's getting on a little bit. I was actually, funnily enough, looking at him 24. The other week. He's 24.
25 in November.
There's two things I have about Aaron Cashin. One is just pure novelty. I was looking at Ipswich beat Blackburn 3-0 the other week. All three goal scorers were Irish. Sammy Smaddix, Jack Taylor, and then Aaron Cashin on goal. And then the other thing I was thinking of, when I was looking at that and I was looking around the championship, and Mark McGuinness now is getting regular game time at Sheffield United. How far are these lads off making an Ireland squad? Because we do have so much depth at that position, and I'm not even counting the likes of, say, Boston Wallow. We've hopes for playing in midfield, who has played centre half for pretty much all of this season.
Yeah. I suppose, like, we talked about Anselmo Garcia McNulty last week, and yeah, like, when you compare the Eredivisie to the English Championship, like, there's probably no comparison. But I think this is obviously, Aaron Cashin seems like a similar type of player. He's not the biggest.
No, he's not the quickest either.
But he's left footed and he's got a good kind of range of passing. But probably quite encouragingly from an Ireland perspective is that you had like Rossinho and Wayne Rooney, like, as well, who thought really, really high of him.
Yeah.
And
thought very highly of Jason Knight as well.
Yeah, and obviously he's a good attitude, and he's really keen to go and play and kind of develop his career. Like, I don't know if this is a player that maybe gets into an Ireland squad maybe towards the end of this year, maybe Nations League games or something like that. But like, if he continues playing well for Blackburn, and
he might
go there permanently, because
if they stay up, because they're down there, you know, and they'd probably have to have an upturn in form. But it was funny, like, it's a big outlay for Brighton, that.
Yeah,
like, it is, like, within reason, you know, 10 million is quite an expense. So there's obviously a player in there, and I just think the Birmingham move has probably set him back, although he was only there for whatever it was, 4 months. I think that has maybe set him back an extra 12 months in that sort of way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'll have to, especially with Blackburn now being down in the doldrums of the championship at the moment. So interesting one on that front. I don't have a whole lot more, just on the team of the week.
There's a man on that team, Jack Moylan, who people might know from his time in Shelburne.
Yeah.
Obviously gone to Lincoln City. The first time I ever saw Jack Moylan play was, I think we were under eight, he came out to play with us at Malahide United, and it was one of those things that everyone knew immediately. This guy is just head and shoulders above everyone else. And I remember my dad would have coached at the time, because my dad played football.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like, yeah, I haven't seen a kid that good at that age, like, at football in a long time.
Yeah.
He went over, I remember we were a teenager, I think he went to Preston maybe, and a couple other clubs on trial. Never really fully worked out for him, but now it is. And it's brilliant to see him playing and scoring goals, because, I mean, I've seen it firsthand, the talent that he has, and I know that he does have it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, head and shoulders.
He's,
like,
got a proper footballing brain as well when you watch him play. He just sees things differently. And his goal at the weekend, I encourage everyone to go and have a look at it from range. Like, fizzed the shot, like, proper fizzed it. Like, not a technique you see used all that often, but the injury struggles are what's really prevented him from doing this 2 years ago. You know, he had a flying start to this season, and he was in a couple of these team of the weeks early on, and then picked up a pretty bad injury. And I think he might be back slightly ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
But obviously doesn't seem to be in any risky sort of way. You know, it's just his recovery. He's obviously put his head down and gotten back.
Obviously, Damien Duff absolutely loved him and adored him when he was there at Shelburne, and I think he's one of the best League of Ireland players we've seen in the last couple of years.
Like, yeah, for sure.
I actually looked at the quotes quite interestingly at the weekend. You know, his manager Michael Scubala, who managed Leeds once upon a time.
Yeah, he's been linked with a couple of bigger jobs as well in the championship.
Old Scooby called him. We call Jack the Magic Man, as he finds these magic moments. So, yeah, a magic little player, and hopefully his development can kind of keep going the way it's going.
Lincoln currently 4 points off the top of League One. Obviously, Brian Barry Murphy's Cardiff City are top. Josh Honahan is currently out injured. He will be back for Lincoln, we're hoping, within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, hopefully. I see there, actually, just before we came in there, I was looking at the ticker there on Sky Sports, and Adam Reach, who's been playing a left wing back for Lincoln this season, he's signed a new contract for another year too, but he's a very experienced player. He's been up and down the leagues for quite some time, so there's nothing to really worry about there. But I'd be excited to see how Josh Holland gets on when he does return to fitness.
League of Ireland, obviously we know Jack Moylan was a huge star for Shelburne while he's here. Another man who's a huge star, 12 goals last season, a place in the PFAI team of the year, Young Player of the Year, Owen Elding. For those of you who missed it this morning, Jessica Farry was reporting in the Sligo Champion that Sligo Starman is on the verge of a move to Scottish side Hibernians. She says the clubs agreed a fee on Monday night for a six-figure sum, with a number of add-ons that could potentially see that figure rise significantly. Owen Elding, Hibernians, six-figure fee. What do we think?
Yeah, look, I know there was kind of hopes and rumours that he might go for 1 million or maybe a little bit more, but Yeah, when it's on your... I know that he did sign a contract extension as well midway through last year, but it's hard for these clubs to try and get this money out of clubs across the water, out of clubs in Europe. Obviously, he'd been linked with Sturm Graz as well during...
It did seem strong links, yeah.
Yeah, during the year last year. And quite clearly, he was one of the best players in the league last year, never mind one of the best young players. I'd be quite... after telling Johnny Kenny to get out of Celtic a few weeks ago, I'd be quite actually enthused about this move to Hibernian, because it's a team that you could get into, like, you know? Like, Hibernian have improved over the last couple of months.
Shocker result the weekend, though.
Yeah, stink of a result, but that's kind of Hibernian in a nutshell. But, like, they are following... I know I've been on about this before, but this kind of Football Data model of, like, signing players from all over Europe and further afield and try and improve them. And there are obviously characteristics and attributes that Owen Elding has that can, you know, that Hibernian or Hibs are really enthused about and really kind of think that they can maybe take this player to the next level. And I think it's a good step up as well. Like, he's not, you know, we've seen players especially go to Italy over the last couple of years and struggle. Like, this is a good move where he's played a load of first team football. He's banged in a load of goals last season. You could tell, I actually done the Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers game at the end of the season last year, where Sligo wanted the win to kind of get out of the relegation playoff. And you could see the amount of responsibility that Owen Elding kind of put on his own shoulders. He was like the man in the ball in the half spaces. He scored the penalty. He was absolutely excellent. So I'd be really encouraged about this move. I would be disappointed for Sligo and kind of the money that they've received. But... unfortunately, that's just the world we live in.
The big thing for me would be the fee. I thought they could probably command a little bit more, and I know he is under contract for another year. And we obviously saw Mason Mealy move for four. We see Shamrock Rovers holding out for Michael Noonan. They want $2 million.
Plus, yeah.
Owen Elding has 12 goals last season. He was in the team of the year as a teenager. Second top scorer. I really thought they could command a bit of a bigger fee. He's going to Hibs, where obviously Kieran Bowie is up top, Scotland international. He's earned 8 goals in the SPL so far this season. There is a chance where Kieran Bowie leaves. He had been linked with Celtic
and Rangers.
Which I feel
take
like
your picks on.
that tends to happen when you when you do quite well or in the SPL. Obviously, Kieran Bowie had been with Fulham before. Matthew, what do you make of this move?
Yeah, like, I wouldn't be, it's not a sitting on the fence thing or anything like that, but it always just depends on what their plans are for him. Like, you know, he's 19, he's not going in there as a child who's going to sit in the academy for a couple of years. I mean, I can imagine he's going in there to play. The level at which that will be is obviously a point of contention as to how good the Scottish League actually is. As David says, I'd agree with the sentiment that it is a league where he could go and play. It's a team where he can go and play, especially if someone like Kieran Bowie does leave. That remains to be seen. I'd be surprised if it happened in January. Maybe it's a summer thing, and going in January, maybe that's another thing with him where it gives him a couple of months to settle, and next season is where you see who he gets on. He's also not, he's 19, I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
He's turning 20. Like, he's not Mason Mealy in this situation where he's far younger and he's going to a far higher level. This is more of a
gentler step.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just on the fee, I know this isn't the point, right? And you obviously want the fee to be as high as possible. We all do, regardless of which Irish team is of your preference or anything like that. But you mentioned about them getting him signed on a new contract, and I imagine there was a case where, look, I'll sign this contract and the club will get a bit more money than they would get. But when I feel it's time to go, or when it is, I'm going to go, like, you know, and I do, whether that's in writing or not, I don't know that, but I would imagine that's the situation. And I would hate to think about how much money, if any, they would have gotten if he hadn't have actually signed that deal. So look, it's not ideal. You want it to be as high as possible, and I understand your frustration around it and the frustration in general that it's not higher, but I can understand why, you know.
We had the 60 grand Seamus Coleman thing. Like this is going to be maybe up towards 400,000, 500,000. Okay, Coleman might have left, 17 years ago or something like that. So, like, it's an improvement, but, like, it does take time, you know, it does take time.
And it's not going to be consistent. It's like, not every young player we sell is going to go for more than the last. That's just not how the world works.
Yeah. And I think what you would probably need is, as well, I know, Ben, you're on about, like, we were on about talking about Michael Noonan last week, and you said if he was, like, Serbian or Croatian, he'd go for 5-6 million. Like, unfortunately, we probably, like, from Irish football's perspective, we probably need a young player to go and maybe have like the impact like James McLean had when he went to
tear it up,
and just tear it up, and then hopefully then, you know, the money kind of comes in, you know, a bit more kind of consistently on you know, for players that are moving. So yeah, like you probably need another breakout star again. Hopefully Elding is the case in Hibernian, but yeah, like it's funny, we're still getting a lot of comments actually on the Michael Noonan clip last week.
Before we do get on to that, can I just ask one quick question? Would you have rather seen him go to Lincoln?
No. Definitely not.
Okay. No, I think, like I kind of making the point last week where the, I think Scottish Premiership is in a place like
developmental, like, yeah,
developmental outside of Celtic and Rangers, like, you know.
Yeah, no, that's grand. That's I just wanted to get happy enough that was a staunch, like, okay, that's grand. Yeah, so that's an interesting thought though, because the level would be similar in terms of like the ability of a Lincoln and a Hibs. They give each other a game, you know.
Yeah, similar level. You're on a better showcase though, I think.
Yeah, and like Hibs could get to, like, they're fifth. They could get to Europe.
Yeah. No, of course.
Very quickly before I get on to Noonan, I should just add on the fee front, because I know obviously if you're listening, and I know myself sometimes at home, you don't fully understand why clubs aren't getting the fees. A huge factor in that is facilities. So when specifically an English club come in and try and buy your player, everything is taken into account.
Yeah.
So when Victor Osimhuna went to Arsenal, and the same with Michael Noonan, Shamrock Rovers can point to Roadstone facilities and go, he's been training at like top level facilities since he was 8 with Osimhuna. Obviously Noonan was with Pats before. Mm-hmm. So they can command a higher fee. With Sligo, obviously you don't have those facilities out in the West that they're training in. And it, like, it plays a huge factor into these clubs, like really the risk you're going in to buy them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, like, you know, that when we look at, we saw the stuff last year about like the category 1 and 2 and 3 academies, and we know where the Irish academies are. And like, this is obviously a lot of great work that Mark Scanlon and Will Clark have done, especially Will Clark, and obviously that the lads in from Double Pass last year, and they kind of give us a press briefing as well about the standards that need to be driven and raised, and like hopefully as a result of that, then the money that can be generated for the clubs in the League of Ireland can just only increase.
Yeah, and again, like you may seem like we're banging the drum with this all the time, but I think it is so important to keep that conversation, that narrative going. Like, you put the money into these facilities, it literally will get reinvested with players like Owen Elding going for 2 million, going for 3 million instead of 400 grand.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on. You wanted to call out all the liars. All the cheats and the liars.
The liars, the scumbags and the cheats.
I'll be the non-antagonist in this situation and just say that there was, I'd say, maybe whether intentional or not, a slight misinterpretation of some of the points that were being made regarding a potential move for Michael Noonan to Chelsea.
Yeah, so we had a bit of a discussion here last week about, you know, what players should move. So, you know, what players should move where. And I talked about Michael Noonan and I said he should move to Chelsea. And I'll just see this one here. Dean O'Rourke, Chelsea is one of the worst takes I've ever heard. Well, Dean, I think I give a good explanation into why it would be a good move.
I like you, Dean.
You know,
you should clarify that again now. Why should he move to Chelsea? Did you say and mean that he should?
I said he should take advantage out of the Chelsea model.
I would be more of the opinion that it's an interesting thing. I wouldn't be totally against it, I would say. But I think there's better moves.
But like, obviously the best move is to go in the first team of Barcelona or whatever. But like,
okay,
like as the moves that we were discussing at the time, Chelsea, Hoffenheim, Celtic, I was like, Chelsea, like, biggest club, obviously, you know. So that's why I was...
Chelsea, a bigger club than Celtic there, yeah.
Well, in ways.
Don't back down, double down. That's exactly what Mr. Wills is doing here.
Get the Lemmy clip just right across there. I understand where people can say it's an outrageous take.
Because on the face of it, it is.
It is.
On the face of it, it is. But when you look at the opportunity, it's a different path to first team football. It's a different offering, you know. It's a unique offering of a way into men's first team football.
And I don't necessarily agree with you, but I heard you outlist your points. I feel like social media tends into, you see the headline clip, he goes, Chelsea, and everyone goes, he's not getting past Liam Delap and João Pedro. Why did he go to Chelsea? You know what I mean? Without hearing the rest of the
point. Here's a, sorry, just as a slight example, not the same at all, really, but there's a player called Marshall Godo. I don't know how familiar you'd be with him. He's playing for Strasbourg at the minute. He scored twice at the weekend. He was at Fulham's academy, came up through Fulham's academy. So obviously a slight difference there in that he was in England. He got released. He went and played for, I think, Margate in the second or third division of National League football. The
seaside
seventh.
Football.
He goes to seventh tier. Then got picked back up by Fulham, was playing in the PL2 for them and was absolutely killing it. I know so much about this because he got a loan move to Wigan for the season.
I was wondering.
And he was very good, like clearly just a level above. Like even they played United in the cup that season, and he just had a bit about him, you know, tricky winger, good player. And went back to Fulham and moved to Strasbourg for £7 million, and he's one of the most formed players in the league. On
That's a great example. That is a great example. SPZL78. Seriously, where do you get these clueless fools from? Look, we all went to journalism school. Look, that's where you can get them. Really, so if you want to come on,
believe it or not,
if you want to find any fools, you know where to go.
Yeah, Diggs Lane, Marconi House. Look, we had a good discussion, I think, about Michael Leon, and kind of a lot of interaction or whatever. Like as well, he's obviously going to be a huge star.
Hopefully,
and whether he's playing for Shamrock Rovers in the first week of the season or not, like there's a couple of days to go to the end of the transfer window, and I'd be really keen to understand or to get to know, Ben, do you think he'd be playing at Shamrock Rovers on the first game of the season on the 6th of Feb against Dundalk?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just my inkling. That's just my inkling of how these things go.
Just before we move on very quickly, Ronald Robbins, sorry, Ronaldo.
You can't even call out the liars correctly.
This isn't a liar. Rovers are dead right to hold out. They have invested a lot of money and resources into him. They should look to recoup that plus profit. League of Ireland clubs have been taking advantage of for long enough. And I think that's a good point to end on, because we see that with maybe the Eldings transfer at the minute, and we're all in the business of bigging up our own players, bigging up the league, and trying to like hopefully players develop. And this is why we've all become obsessed as football fans of like, how's Evan Ferguson doing? Like, is he training today? Is he in the Roma social media post today? You know, like I'm always checking, like, is he there? Is he not there? Like Troy Parrott, like we're all so keen for these players to grow and develop. So look, we have to give them a bit of time. But I think that's a fair point that League of Ireland clubs, the league has improved again, two clubs again in the Conference League, you know, they should, you know, hold out and look for, you know, be remunerated in what they deserve.
And look, as we said again, that all comes back to facilities and investment and money being put in, so we can ask for these. We're actually going to have a brilliant piece on maybe grassroots football, less so the academy's football, with Tommy Martin on Off the Ball this evening. On the FAI Pathways plan. Appears to be dead in the water. There's talk that the people who are involved in it are going to be leaving the FAI in the summer, and that's kind of the reason why.
Like Mark Hannum's already left.
Mark Hannum's already gone. There is other people involved in it who it appears their contracts are going to be running out in the summer and they won't be coming back.
I need to be careful about like contracts and different things, but like Mark Hannum completely failed really in that kind of football pathways plan, and obviously he's gone, so it doesn't really like, it doesn't matter to him, it doesn't care, it's the rest of us that are left of this. And I seen, and there was a really good, it's in your podcast feed now, Football Saturday from last Saturday, we had John Duggan joined by Johnny Ward and Owen Doyle and David Connolly, and Owen made a really good point that like he had a load of kids in his house disappointed that there was no football played on Saturday because of the weather. And if we see the weather today and for the rest of the week, you know, summer football, and I can tell you this from personal experience, summer football is the only way to go in Ireland. Like, look, we are a country in the northwest of Europe. You know, we're an island. We get a lot of bad weather. We get a lot of rain. And like, obviously the facilities are kind of stretched as to what they are at the minute anyway. But you have to play football in the best time of the year. And the Alliance calendar makes so much sense. People in Irish football, people who run Irish football, have to just forget about what the GAA think, about what rugby think, about whoever else. You just have to be selfish and kind of put your own... And like sports, like Shane Keegan's always on here as well, and he makes a good point. Sports shouldn't be competing against each other, especially for children underage. They should be made play everything they want to play, and they should be allowed to play everything they want to play. And coming from where I played all my underage football as like winter league, and we had, even when we played winter football, we still had battles with GAA. I'm from Monaghan, I know all about it. But when I played senior football, thankfully, we played in the best time of the year. we train obviously, you know, this time of the year, which is obviously not great. We're training in, indoors and in Astros and stuff like that. But when we do get to play in the best pitches in the summertime, in the long evening, and it's just a overall completely more better and a more enjoyable experience. And I think that's what the kids that are not playing this summer football need to experience.
Yeah,
it's only going to improve their development.
I had a similar, just for, I know you want to touch on,
no,
as well, I had a similar kind of experience with winter football as a kid, where I suppose I'm obviously from Dublin, and we were lucky enough that when the winter months came, we used to go play indoor football, which was actually really beneficial for your touch and your skills, which was brilliant.
Yeah, like a futsal.
We used to go up and play futsal in Finglas on Saturday mornings. Ray Houghton used to come up a few times actually, watch us play.
He
was watching us. So, it was something that I remember loving when it came back to March and April, and you can go out and play every week on a football pitch again, and you miss it so much. And it's so crucial at that age for a kid to be able to play football outdoors every week, whether it's 5-a-side, 7-a-side, 9-a-side, and eventually up to 11, whatever it is. Like, it just needs to be done. And I think you can worry about the other sports when you worry about the other sports.
Yeah.
But this just needs to be done, or we are going to fall even further behind. I know you have a slightly different
No, I don't. I don't have a slightly different view really at all. I think you're totally right, and all of that makes complete sense. I just think it's easy to say that football being the most, soccer being the most played sport in the country and all that, absolutely perfect. That's great. That's fine. And that is the most important thing. And in principle, that means you can sort of forget about what else is going on, focus on yourselves, and let them worry about themselves in terms of GAA and whatever other sports might come into it. But as I said, I know anecdotally, and you touched on it there, even coming out of winter months, we would have had to, when I was playing soccer as a kid, we would be forfeiting games coming up to coming out of Christmas, you know, into January. Mm-hmm. The weather, obviously, too, not to be moved on from. A lot of them games would have been rearranged later on in the year because of the weather having to have them postponed. So that's obviously another side of it too. But I just think, like, in practice, as opposed to in principle, that whole thing of the letting kids play whatever they want to play and play as much as they want to play. I played 4, 5, 6 sports growing up, and because that's all I wanted to do. And most kids are the same. Most parents would want their kids doing that.
Yeah.
But there is just a serious amount of politics that comes into it at a local level. And I can assure you, and this can, you can't, you're going to have to make sacrifices. It's not going to be perfect if you do make the switch. You can't keep everyone happy, but there's going to be clubs that are going to, that will really suffer as a result of that, and underage teams will quite literally just fold. So it's just something to acknowledge, I suppose, but it doesn't at all, and I don't want it to make it seem like I'm taking away from what you're saying. I completely agree, and for the betterment of football in the country as a whole, and football development and all that sort of stuff, the aligned calendar makes absolute sense. But there is just, I think it's just worth acknowledging that there is going to be a bit of pain involved with that, especially at local rural level.
The people in GA, the people rugby, basketball, football, like the people who are running these sports, the people who are coaching and giving up their time and putting in like savage effort, like to try and, you know, for the benefit of kids a couple of times a week to go and play a sport, like, you know, fair play to them. They're, you know, without volunteers, you know, not just in the GA, but in sport, in the country in particular, sports just wouldn't happen. So these people that are, you know, trying to organise games and trainings and stuff need to talk to each other. Football need to talk to GAA.
Completely.
GAA need to talk to rugby.
Completely.
Rugby need to talk. And they all need to talk to each other and be like, look, little Johnny and Mary down the road there, they're playing football here, they're playing, you know, playing hurling here, playing camogie there. You know, we need to try and accommodate and like give them the best experience.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Because like when most people won't make it professionally, you know, and they won't play for Ireland or they won't play for their county. But people need to be, you know, children need to be taught with, you know, an encouraging kind of, basically need to be encouraged to have a good experience in sport, and that they go somewhere where they can develop and make friends and look back, you know, when they get a bit older, that, oh my God, I was playing football or I was playing hurling, whatever, and I had a great group of friends back then and it was just wonderful. And, you know, like, and these sports need to just, you know, the people who run the sports need to just be a bit more open and a bit more kind of accommodating for each other, because we know what it's like, you know. We know we had the ban here, you know, the GA.
Yeah,
ban, you know?
Yeah. So, and, like, and a lot of that still lingers on. But it does linger on, and yeah, that's where this side of things where it's like, oh yeah, and why some of the rural clubs can get by in the winter and why they like the winter is because there's an acceptance from them that okay, look, well, we can't operate without being more accommodating for the GA than they are, or whatever other sport are for us.
Yeah.
And in the winter, they'll turn around and go, no, yeah, you go play that. I'll keep yourself fit for the winter. That's the mentality of not just the kids. It's not the kids. Kids are just going because they want to go and play, but there's other people involved. There's parents. Yeah. There's other, not ulterior motives, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a case of, oh, that's grand. Once you're back ready for March, and then we'll move on. That does happen. And it's the kids on the other side of that who's, you know, coming from families where they're not so GAA focused or rugby focused or whatever, and they actually want to play soccer, and that's their main thing, that they would be left by the wayside, really, where they're in an area where they have a local team, but that local team can't field because XYZ isn't allowed to play soccer come whatever month. And that problem would be worsened if we moved to the summer and those kids are left by the wayside, and then if they do want to play soccer, they have to travel further, which puts more weight on the other parents. And also there's so many knock-ons, but as I said, I don't want to keep clarifying it. For the country as a whole, it makes total sense, but there's going to be pain there somewhere, and it's just
municipal facilities is the way forward. Like in Europe.
It's a very complex topic.
I
agree with what you said. If you want to hear more on it, because we would love to talk about it all day, but unfortunately we can't. Tommy Martin will be on Off the Ball this evening, talking about the FAI Pathways Plan with Owen. You can find that in your podcast feed. Very quickly before we wrap up, I have two things. One is a little transfer note. Senan Mullen gone on loan to Bohemians from Torino, a Dundalk man who moved to Torino.
He's from Cavan, came through the town,
went to Torino about 2 years ago. He's been capped at Ireland underage level, was out on loan in Serie B, he's coming back to Bohemians now. That is one to keep your eye on.
Serie C, was it?
Serie C, yeah. So that'll be one to keep an eye on now for the season. A couple of good signings from Bohemians, Sadio Diallo, Harry Vaughan.
Harry Vaughan, I'm excited about a couple of
very exciting signings there. There's something that we want to talk about, and obviously we are so looking forward to the playoffs in March.
Two months
from a couple of days ago. The ticket portal just closed for Czechia away.
And David will be there. Not at the game.
Not in the stadium, as it is a very, very small.
We're not getting any tickets because we're sitting in the studio. By the way, up, you know, it's like we're going to be in
floating around Prague.
Come say hi.
If you find them there, I'll be back in this studio.
Go ask him what he thinks about Michael Noonan's potential move to Chelsea. He'll take that really well.
Some of us have to work, unfortunately.
We'll be working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll be working away. All right. Yeah. Testing out how good is Sour Pramen in the hometown of its brewery. Anyway, there was a piece from Neil O'Riordan today. I'm a lifelong fan, yet I'm not sure I want Ireland to qualify for this World Cup, given the state of Trump's America. We unfortunately don't have all day to delve into this, David. I know you had a few thoughts very quickly on this.
Yeah, just firstly, Neil's columns every week on a Tuesday are kind of a must read. So he had a great one last week about kind of cross-border football, which we actually planned to talk about last week, but we didn't get a chance to. It was just ran out of time. But yeah, look, Ireland are going to hopefully qualify. Hopefully they beat Czechia. Hopefully if it's Denmark. Or
they beat a Patrick Dorgulis Denmark.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, like, if Ireland did beat Czechia and, you know, they're playing Denmark or North Macedonia, like, we don't know, but...
Well, we're going to be playing either of them.
Could you imagine Ireland and Denmark in the political climate in Dublin? Like, Denmark, you know, obviously Greenland is part of their territory, and you know, the host of the World Cup, the major host of the World Cup, is planning or wanting to kind of take that territory from you, whether by force or
by any means necessary,
by any other means. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like this World Cup, like, I remember Qatar in 2022, I remember Russia in 2018, obviously, as well. Russia had obviously kind of annexed Crimea before that, and yeah, that obviously there was the thing that was going on in the Donbass as well at the time. Like, obviously FIFA is the organization of no morals. And when you have someone like Sepp Blatter, who is, like, you know, maybe not the greatest character of all time, but now he's coming out and he's telling people to boycott the tournament, just goes to show you. Now, obviously he has his own motives for that too, but he came out there yesterday and said, like, fans should boycott the US World Cup. And I think this is only kind of growing. Like, there was an interview last week in the Athletic with Seb Stafford Bloor. Okay, Gutlick has started a conversation He is the Sampaoli president, which is obviously a very political club. And it's a member of the DFB as well, executive committee. And he's encouraged a discussion about a boycott of this year's Men's World Cup in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Now, obviously, like, we all would love Ireland to be there, but like the way the US is, you know, the US has been under, especially the Trump presidency, has been nothing short of a disgrace. A second person was killed in Minnesota this last weekend by ICE. And, you know, we, all the countries who go to participate in the World Cup and who will go and play in the US will contribute to this kind of cleansing of the Trump image, and also, like, kind of, yeah, kind of legitimize this World Cup, because obviously this World Cup was negotiated for in the first Trump presidency. And I think it's just really important that Ireland people, or Irish people, that Ireland football fans are aware, and and generally for the large part they are aware of what is going on. Like, you know, if Ireland do get there and they play the second game in Atlanta and we have to go to the US to that game, like, are we going to look back and look at our social media posts and, like, you know, delete some of the stuff about Palestine? Are we worried about that kind of stuff? And Neil O'Riordan wrote in his column today about going to China and for the 2008 Olympics, and kind of speaking about, like, you know, whether his room was bugged, or, you know, like, some of the journalists that were on the trip with him, like The Guardian, the BBC, those websites were blocked at the time before the Olympics. So, yeah, this is like a, not more than a rogue nation state. Like, this is a state that facilitated the removal of another country's president just a couple of months ago. Mm. So I think those factors we just need to be aware of, and we need to reference them. We were very critical of Qatar, and rightly so, for its human rights abuses, its workers' rights abuses. And yeah, in the US we have this kind of militia who are, you know, legitimized by the US government and as an ICE, and they're kind of, they've killed 21 people this year, which is crazy, because unfortunately football, which we all love and we're all passionate about, but these things can't go unreported on, they can't go unnoticed. And if Ireland do get to the World Cup, and I spoke about this in the News Talk Daily podcast a few weeks ago, it's going to take very, very brave sports people, or very, very brave fans, to do any sort of protest or to kind of, you know, stand for any sort of human rights or basic human decency at this summer's World Cup. And I just wanted to make that point before, you know, obviously we talk about, like, the things that are kind of around the Irish football team, but, like, we could be part of this huge, massive global event in the summer, and we all hope that we are. There are lots of reasons why many of us hope that we aren't.
Yeah, it's very important to stress as well, like, it's not like the sport is going to be entirely different from the social or political events currently going on in the country. We saw yesterday that ICE agents are going to be active at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Not that the people they're hunting for will be able to afford the 25,000 tickets, $25,000 tickets that get sold, but you cannot go in safety to a sporting event without fear of an agent turning up and lawfully or unlawfully shooting you or arresting you. The one thing I would say to you, and it's not saying I don't disagree with you at all, what comes to my mind maybe is like a sense of, like, othering or Westernism, like Edward Said kind of sort of thing come to head of why is there no talk of, well, I know obviously we've just read a piece from Neil O'Riordan, but why is there no real talk of boycotting this the way there might have been about Qatar, Russia, and what makes this different to them?
I think that what makes this different is that the entire world, and we've seen people speak about this at Davos last week, are kind of subservient to the United States. They're afraid, you know, they will say one thing publicly, but then when we're speaking to US officials or presidents or Donald Trump, or whoever it may be, they'll say a different thing to him, they'll pander to him. So the entire world is kind of, seems to be in fear of what's going on in the US, and are quite afraid to really call it out. And it's going to take, you know, we've seen the Irish political leadership fail to call out the US government year after year after year. We've built a capital city like Dublin that is really for American multinational companies and really not for people to live in it. So yeah, like, I think because Ireland has such close ties to the US in particular, and we have, like, you know, 30 million Americans who claim Irish heritage, and many of those probably, you know, maybe kind of supporting Trump, Yeah, I think there's just a lack of appetite within normal people. But I think this is something that will rear its head again. It's something that we're going to be talking about again.
It's a conversation that's going to crop up a lot more. Yeah, and actually qualify too, you know.
Yeah, and it's only I think within Europe, like we've seen obviously the German protests, kind of, you know, there wasn't much of a protest at the Qatar World Cup. We see what's going on in Iran at the minute. I remember the Iranian protests as well that were at the World Cup where they didn't sing the anthem against in one of the group games. So unfortunately, football, sport, politics is all linked, and it's intrinsically linked, and they can never be separated, especially at the World Cup where it's nations competing against nations. Whether there'll be a boycott or not a boycott, I would highly doubt there would be one, but it's definitely something to think about, and it's definitely something, I don't know, maybe the fans and the fan groups that will be hopefully going from an Irish perspective need to think about. And I think, and I do think that it is a very good thing that if Ireland do get there, that two of the games are in Mexico, and Mexico is a great country with many Irish links as well, San Patricio's amongst others. So yeah, let's just see what happens. But I think it's just important to call that out.
And of course, we've seen what happens when Irish people do go up against the current US government. Only last week we saw Irish journalist Niall Stannage, who's with The Hill, I think, in the United States, question Caroline Levitt, and immediately gets shut down. It's obviously a topic that we're going to return to before the World Cup comes about many times, I'm sure. And it's going to be a very interesting one to follow.
Nicholas McGeehan, sorry, was on.
He was on with us last week on the PM show. Brilliant. Listen, from Fair Square, journalist, Scottish journalist. Highly recommend anyone to go back and listen to it in your podcast feed if you're an Off the Ball member. Unfortunately, we're just out of time for today. Matthew had a brilliant interview with Joe Murphy this morning. If you'd like to check that out, it'll be wherever you get your podcast in the Off the Ball feed. We'll have Tommy Martin, of course, coming on later to talk about the FAI Pathways plan. That is all we have for you this week. Chat to you soon.